Freedom Fiends. Yo, what's up, Ben?
Hey, how's it going, Michael?
It's going really good. We got Ben Stone today filling in for Nima Vidati. Nima's on a boat. I'm on a boat. I'm on a boat. I'm on a boat.
Floating around out in the water.
On a boat. Yeah, man. Boats.
I guess that would be considered a ship, not a boat.
Yeah, but there's a hip-hop joke song called I'm on a Boat, which is, which is all about being on a boat, man. Being on a boat. Are you on a boat, Ben? You on a boat?
No.
A boat? Why not?
No, I'm in a windowless bunker.
Yeah? In rural, undisclosed location, disputed zone?
Yeah.
So, Ben, how you doing? What's up? What's new?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I was just logging out of a forum, and now I can actually pay attention to the show that we're on live.
Was that the Bad Quaker forum?
It was.
Yeah?
I was doing some quick maintenance over there.
How can people find that, and what can they expect to find there?
Just go to badquaker.com and look over on the right-hand side of the page, and you'll see a button that says forum, and you can go over there and look around. And if you like what you see, you can make a login and say things.
Does that cost money?
Nope, absolutely free. There is a pay section if you choose to be a part of it, but that's more just to support the Bad Quaker podcast. Then you don't really get a lot of benefits from that. But
that's quite honest of you to say. Yeah, you don't get anything else. Just I get money.
Yeah. and you know, there's all kinds of topics: garden. Guns, all kinds of fun things.
Burying guns in your garden.
How to raise guns in your garden.
The care and feeding of your guns.
Grow your own.
So people say our sound is better now. We're doing something interesting today. We're talking over the Comrex, but you and I are talking to each other via Mumble, which we're not using the version yet that has Opus, but it's coming. And the interesting thing, we did some sound checks with Ian Freeman the other day, and we tried your like $150 microphone. It's the same mic as I have through your mixer, and your mixer is dying a slow death, and it's been getting worse and worse, and everyone who listens to Bad Quaker knows it. So we said, well, try your $12 headset, and you did, and it sounded a little better. But then Ian said, do you have any earbuds? Because I'm getting echo from Michael. And I said, put on earbuds and then cover them with gun ears, like the ears you'd wear when you're shooting. And you did that. So we're going through the $1,500 Comrex using 99-cent earbuds on your end. And that's the best sound we could possibly get.
But we're going to cure that in a couple days.
How? What are you getting? You're getting something that's going to vastly improve liberty in general.
Well, my loving wife was going to surprise me with this, and
she and I plotted behind your back. She called me up.
She did.
She emailed me and said, "What mixer should I get for Ben? I heard Ben's mixer sucks." I guess she heard you talking about it or doing the sound test with Ian. So
yeah.
So I told her to get the Nobtron 6000, which is the lower line but still high quality version with too many knobs of the one I'm using, which is the Nobtron 9000. Which is actually the H2442 Behringer, which is just stunning. There's so much stuff, man. It's so much stuff.
So I can't wait to get a hold of it and plug it in and fiddle with it.
Yeah. Yep, so that's going to vastly improve liberty. But one thing we are going to do is the Freedom Fiends are going to be putting out a torrent, the best of Bad Quaker, which is going to be your top, 40? Your 40 best episodes. The 40 episodes where you're not interviewing people, so there's not crackly-ass Skype audio. And you're also not having a pod beef with anybody. Because you do get into some pod beef ones, and they're really not that interesting to anyone except you. The same with me. When I get in pod beefs, no one wants to hear it. You know, there's pod beefs going around. It's pod beef season. You know, the first week of spring, the second week of spring, people's sap starts flowing and the pod beefs start happening. But that is not for the ages. That is not, you know, the history books, I mean, the only beefs that they write about that are interesting are like, you know, Francis Ferdinand being shot with a 32 and it's starting World War One. And that's not the kind of pod beef we have. So, you know, you criticizing Ron Paul for copyright, that's not for the ages, man. When you're dropping mad science, though, and teaching and being the calm center at the storm of liberty, that's the ones we want. So you're going to make a list of, you were supposed to make a list this weekend, but you got in a pod beef and you put all your energy into a pod beef. And that's where the energy goes, and it is not productive. So when you're done with your pod beef now, so you're going to make a list of the 40 best of Ben Quaker, and Sean Duvalli, our wonderful torrent master, is going to make a torrent, and we're gonna host it and seed box it and seed it and blog it and put it in our feed. So that will probably do more for anything happening out there to make it so you're around 100 years from now, because it makes you drone proof. The thing that inspired me was you talking about there was some Austrian economist whose papers were saved by a communist who hated him or something. What was that story?
Ah, yeah. Actually, Ludwig von Mises in the 1930s, he was, well, going back even further into the 20s, he was very influential in European economics. And specifically in Austria, he was one of the big names there. And as the 30s started to roll in and the Nazis started taking power, you know, to their north in Germany, Ludwig von Mises was outspoken in economically speaking in why Nazism as being a form of socialism wouldn't work and what the flaws were and so forth. And in addition to that, you know, Mises was a Jewish by heritage.
By trade.
And, yeah. So when Nazi Germany invaded Austria, Mises literally escaped as they were coming in, almost as they were breaking into his apartment. He was leaving town. And he grabbed up his fiancée and her daughter. And they, or she may have, the daughter may have already left, I can't remember. But anyway, they literally ran for their lives to get out of Austria and into Switzerland. They barely made it to Switzerland. And the Nazis went into his, it was more like a condo as we would think it today than really an apartment because it belonged to his family. But they ransacked it, took everything, took all of his library, all of his personal papers, everything. The only thing he escaped with was just the bare essentials to get on the road and get to Switzerland. So they locked it all away in vaults. You know, they were meticulous about labeling everything and keeping it. And you know, Nazis were like that.
Yeah.
And as Mises eventually made it to the U.S., flat broke and just, you know, barely surviving. At the end of the war, as the Nazi regime was collapsing, a lot of their stuff that they had stashed like that, like all the belongings of the Mises family, the Soviet Union came in and grabs it all. And of course, they're very meticulous about labeling everything and putting it away for the ages. And so so here's this fascist regime that takes all the world's greatest works against socialism and fascism, and they basically archive it. And then the Soviets come in and their socialist model, and they do the same thing. They archive it in Moscow. And then you fast forward all the way up into the 1980s, and a guy named Yuri Meltsev, I can't remember his name. He's going to be at Porkfest, though, speaking at Porkfest. He was an economist for the Soviet Union, and he's digging around and finds this stuff. And he's like, holy crap, this is great. And it converted him from being a communist into being an Austrian economist. And he eventually got out of the Soviet Union under the excuse that he had to study this weird capitalist nonsense so that they could find out a flaw in it. And so he got out of the Soviet Union before it collapsed. I'm sure he'll be speaking at Porkfest about this topic, so he'll probably have a better explanation of it than me.
Cool, man. Cool. See, that's what I'm talking about. That's the Ben teaching that we really like so much. And we'll have more of Ben teaching, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, after we go sell some things in the market. Worms.
Worms.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius sent his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features. And corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Freedom Fiends, with Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, filling in for Nima Vidati, who is sipping non-alcoholic drinks on a luxury cruise boat. What's up?
Somewhere.
What's up, Ben?
Somewhere in the free seas.
In the not-so-free seas. Well, they're free in the extent that he can smoke Cuban cigars there, but that's about it. They don't have any, like, you know, tranny hooker cruises or anything. Or maybe they do, but no tranny crookers and hookers and crocodile cruises.
So we have this Freedom Fiends Fiends chat line that we're looking at here.
Chat page. We're not doing the chat line, man. We're not doing the chat line. We killed it. We killed it after we hosted a Pod Beef, and it just turned out to be a cluster fark, and we will never do that again. We're never going to take live calls until we're on radio. And when we're on radio, somebody else will be screening them. And we'll have a list of the people we let through. So, you know, if you're in with the Fiends, you're in once we're on radio. That's good. And even when we're on radio, you will be able to hear streaming on radio's streaming link. So it'll be just like this, but the time will be a little different. It'll be Saturdays and Sundays from noon to 2 Central Time. It's a little earlier. So we got some Fiends news. We got... I'm selling some Fiends history. I'm selling some Fiends microphones that I've been using a long time, and they're still in great shape. I'm selling a couple condenser mics that both go all the way back to Submission and Coffee and were used on them on that show and, 2007, 2006, and were used a lot on the early Fiends episodes and were used in the gun. One was used in the Guns and Weed. Actually, they were both used in the Guns and Weed movie. The blue one was used for some interviews. It's in the movie on camera. And the other one, the silver one, silver-looking one, which is a Rode NT1A, was used for all the DJ's voiceover in the Guns N' Weed movie. So there's some real Fiends history there. So if you go to the Freedom Fiends blog, there's a link to those eBay sales. There are sales on eBay. And what else?
Michael, would you be willing to include an autographed picture of yourself with every purchase?
No, but I would autograph the mic if someone wanted to, or put a sticker on it, just a blank, you know, label, and autograph that. I don't know. I'm not that big on autographs, but if people ask for them, I'll do them. I wondered about that back in the day when I started. When I played in a band, I got asked for autographs, and I was like, yes, of course, let me sign it on your boobs, baby. And I was really, you know, young and stupid about it. And then when I sort of started to grow up a little bit and be myself and be the wonderful human being I am now, when I was touring with the DIY or Die movie, people started asking me for autographs again. And I felt really weird about it. I kind of felt like saying no. And I asked Ian MacKay about it, who was kind of like, he kind of had a place in my life that you do now. Like, I'd call him up on the phone and ask him for advice because I thought he was doing it right. And I think you're doing a lot of things right. So a lot of times I ask you up, you're kind of my Liberty sponsor, like in the Liberty 12-step program or something. So I asked him one time in person when I was interviewing him, he said, yeah, I just sign them. You know, I think they're kind of weird. Or I don't think he said they're kind of weird, but he got that I thought they were kind of weird. And he said, yeah, I just sign them because it's not hard to do. It doesn't take any effort on your part. And somebody puts it in a drawer and then 10 years later they find it and it's meaningful to them. And I'm like, okay, I guess. But I guess the reason it's kind of weird to me is it's kind of a great man thing. But we have, at the Fiends, have more of a kind of one-on-one, one-to-many, many-to-one relationship with a lot of our listeners. You know, I sit up and have IM chats with some of our listeners, you know, in the middle of the night, and emails back and forth. And, you know, a lot of the world I don't want to talk to, but a lot of the fiends tend to be really good people. So I chat with them. You know, I think we've attracted the right people, and we do talk to them, and none of them have ever asked me for an autograph. The only thing I ever autographed for the Fiends, I think, well, a couple people have asked me to autograph the Guns and Weed movie when they bought it, and I autographed the tube preamp that I bought for somebody that somebody bought for their boyfriend for a Fiends present, and I put a sticker on that and said inspected by number one MWD, and then signed it illegibly, like my signature tends to be. So yeah, I'll do autographs, but only if I'm asked to. You know, I won't presume that someone wants something autographed. I mean, I'm selling it on eBay and people are bidding who don't even know who the Fiends are. I mean, they're not buying it like, they're not wanting to buy it like, oh, this is something Michael Dean had on his lips. It's more like, oh, this is a good price on a Rode NT1A that's in really good condition, and he's including free shipping and a free gold sputtered pop filter and a, you know, microphone mount. That's a great deal. I'll bid on it. So, yeah, it's up to whoever buys it if I autograph it.
Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to sell my little mixing board that I've been using for whatever, a year and a half or something.
I told you should take it out and shoot it and videotape shooting it. You want to give it a proper burial, but I always think shooting things and videotaping it is a good final use of them.
I could give it a Viking burial. I could
light it and send it down the river.
Yeah, take it out to the out to the Miami River and make a little boat for it. Put it in the little boat, covered in lighter fluid.
Yeah, that could endanger other people though, whereas shooting it wouldn't. I think you should shoot it. I think you should give it an honorable death. I think you should firing squad it. Get a couple friends together. And although I would advise shooting anything that's metal and has metal inside it and you don't know where the metal is. I don't want to give advice with guns because who knows what some idiot will do because what I said to and do it wrong and hurt somebody or hurt themselves. But I like to shoot big chunks of metal at a good distance, like, you know, 100 yards with a rifle, with a powerful rifle, 30 cal battle rifle, because it'll slice through it like butter. Now, you know, if some idiot sets a mixer up at 20 paces and shoots it with a 9mm, there's a good chance it's going to ricochet back somewhere in the direction where they're standing. So, yeah, man.
Or a chunk of it will.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. So always wear eye protection and ear protection, and always observe the rules of gun safety. You know, we said the rules of gun safety in the movie, but I don't think we've ever said them on here. Do you want to recite them with me? Do you want to go through them and explain them?
Oh, wow. I don't have notes.
I don't know them in order, but I know them. Basically, the first one is keep your finger off your trigger until you're ready to shoot. Or is the first one, consider every gun loaded? I think that's it. So
I think that's, yeah.
You know, I have a really good story that I'm very embarrassed about that illustrates assume every gun is loaded. I was living with this girl a long time ago, and I was drinking a lot. And she was an artist, and she used a staple gun to staple canvases, to make her own canvases. And I was helping clean the house one morning, and I found the staple gun, and I, you know, took it out and just tried to shoot a staple across the kitchen with it, and it was empty. And I stuck it back in the drawer. And later that afternoon, she and I were drinking in the kitchen. It's kind of like a Bukowski story, but not as cool or something. But she and I were drinking in the kitchen, and I said, I love you. And she said, I love you too. And I said, you love me so much, you wouldn't care if I did this. And I opened the drawer next to me, pulled out the staple gun, stuck it on her arm, and pulled the trigger on it. And she had filled it with staples in between when I'd checked that it wasn't loaded. That luckily, it was a staple gun only. She pulled it out, you know, wiped it off with peroxide and was fine. But if you do that with guns, people can die. So assume every gun is loaded. We'll have more on gun safety when we come back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh, I'm so sick of looking at Steve's wedding pics, and I'm all out of passive-aggressive comments. What else am I supposed to do at work all day?
Sick of stalking your ex on Facebook?
Yeah!
Are you all out of cute cats and autocorrect mishaps to lolat?
Duh!
Freedom Fiends to the rescue! The Fiends now have a blog. Read all about the latest tyranny today. Dream about lip pair. Laugh while Western civilization collapses. Just click on the cat icon to the right of freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends blog. Read it!
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Worms. Freedom Fiends. What's up, Ben?
How's it going, Michael?
It's going good. It's going good. And I want to thank Team Fiend. Team Fiend has been kicking butt, helping me look up contact info for radio stations for when we're on radio. Sean Duvali, Wilson Hunter, Vaslav over there in the Czech Republic, repping the Fiends hard in the EU. And yeah. And we've been getting lots of help from Team Fiend. Yeah. So we're
so
gonna
Jeff
talk
Cooper.
Jeff Cooper. We're gonna talk about gun safety some more. Yep.
All guns are always loaded.
Oh, and Ron Freeman. Never. Ron Freeman. Sorry, don't want to forget Ron Freeman. Ron's from where I'm from. He's the only Liberty person in the county I grew up in. That he knows of. And he's a sociable guy, so I believe him. It's not a very Liberty-oriented town, man. It's Western New York, Chautauqua County. It's. I left there like 2 days after my 18th birthday. That's how much I wanted to get out. So Jeff Cooper, so there's rules for gun safety. There's 4 rules for gun safety. We like Jeff Cooper's version of them. All guns are always loaded. Number 2, never let the muzzle cover anything you are not willing to destroy. Number 3, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on the target. And number 4, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. And I've also heard, and what is behind it. Like behind it is what's immediately behind it. What's beyond it is what's a half mile behind it, because bullets travel. And I really like his telling of it, but I don't like how the NRA changed it. They don't like the never let the muzzle cover anything you're not willing to destroy. And I talked to someone from the NRA, and they tried to correct me when I used that one time. They said, that makes gun people sound crazy, like they want to destroy things. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. It stresses the danger of not following these rules. A gun will destroy anything you shoot with it, whether it's a living being or, you know, your TV set or a tree. I mean, it's gonna do damage, a lot of it. So I like that telling of it. I like Jeff Cooper, too.
Yeah, I definitely agree on the number 2 rule, because it really is a matter of understanding that the gun will destroy something. It'd be the same thing if it was a hammer. You know, if the hammer could project something at 1,700 feet per second, then it would be the same thing with a hammer. The fact is, this is a tool. It's a very serious tool. And if you don't take seriously what it is and what it can do, then, you know, you're washing it down with words that are politically correct, which is what the National Rifle Association lives on.
Yeah. You know, I don't like public schools, but I think if there's going to be public schools, they should teach gun safety in them instead of, like, in a lot of schools they don't, and they basically teach you, you know, you shouldn't know anything about guns. That's for police and the military. If you know anything about guns, you're a bad person, which leads to people getting shot. And I have a lot of complaints about Wyoming, but one thing that I do like about Wyoming is that in the public schools here, in high school, they actually have hunter safety class, which is pretty damn cool. I mean, that's something that's worth teaching humans, you know, how to not shoot yourself while using a gun. That should be taught in any school, private, public, homeschooling, whatever.
Yeah, just to pick on the NRA a little bit more, okay. In their rules.
Pod beef.
Yeah, their number three rule is always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use.
That's horrible.
Now, what is the use of, let's say you're in your home and you have a shotgun for home defense, which that's, you know, arguably one of the best tools for home defense.
And someone kicks in your door in the middle of the night, some amped up meth addict who has to steal and commit violence because drugs are illegal because the state made them that way. And, you know, I mean, a lot of times people have to use a gun. There is not time to load it, literally.
Right. And especially not if you're having to put in one cartridge or one shell
after
at
the
a
other.
Time. Yeah. That's a ridiculously stupid rule, and that's typical of the NRA.
Yeah. The NRA also, in their training exercises and in their competitions, will not allow the use of any hominoid target. They will not allow a paper target that has a vague shape of a human on it. It has to be, you know, circles or squares or X's. And I think that's kind of silly, too, because you know, if you're learning self-defense, you are learning to shoot a human to keep it from killing you. So, the police are, and the feds are now using targets that look like children. I mean, what's wrong with using a target that looks like, you know, the shape of a man with no face on it? I mean, I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, I say pretty regularly, the NRA is not our friends.
They're square, man. They're so square. So square. So, yeah, Jeff Cooper. Do you want to talk a little bit about Jeff Cooper and who he is and why we should like him?
Jeff Cooper is a man. Was a man. Was he, is he alive?
Mm-mm.
No. He's gone. Yeah, you're right. But he was a man. He was a man's man.
Manly man.
The father of the modern technique of handgun shooting.
Yeah, his whole thing was like, you have to use a 45 and you don't need more than 8 rounds because if you do it right, you don't need more than 8 rounds. And I kind of disagree with that, but personally, but he did well with it, you know, but he was one of those guys that could hit a half inch square on a moving target at 60 yards with a 45 every shot. So, I mean, that's the kind of gunnery he taught.
Yeah, definitely.
Go ahead. Go ahead,
definitely,
man.
A man's man.
Man's Marine. Man. Yeah, Marine. Man's man. Yeah, but he did a lot of teaching in the civilian world, too. So he wasn't just a state bot. He taught a lot of regular folk, and he died in 2006, and he was a great man, even though there's no such thing as a great man. But I liked him a lot. But I don't like the NRA's gun safety rules, man. They seem like they're written by lawyers instead of shooters.
They probably were.
Yeah, probably.
I'd be willing to bet it.
Yeah.
I got a $5 bill right now.
Speaking of lawyers and guns, lawyers, guns, and money, we noticed something interesting was that there was a Yahoo article. I'm going to post it here in the Fiends chat room for those of you who want. And it's, do you want to pull it up too, Ben? We'll talk about it a little bit. Now that we've taught everyone everything they need to know about gun safety. The article is the 10 most expensive places to live in the U.S., and the thing I noticed about this is every one of these places is a place you cannot legally carry a gun outside your house. Manhattan, New York, Brooklyn, New York, which used to be cheap, and then the hipsters moved in and ruined it. Honolulu, Hawaii, San Francisco, California, San Jose, California, Queens, New York, Stamford, Connecticut, Washington, D.C., Orange County, California, and Boston, Massachusetts. Most of those places, you cannot even get a permit unless you're a judge or a diamond merchant or donating lots of money to the sheriffs in some places. And there's a couple of them where maybe you could get a permit, but you have to demonstrate a need. And there's some places you could never get a permit, like San Francisco, where they at one time they only had 10 permits issued, and one of them the mayor issued to herself, Mayor Feinstein. The gun grabber who issued herself a carry permit at one point. So
Classy. You
were saying that you think it wasn't a coincidence that the 10 most expensive places to live in the U.S. are also the places you can't carry a gun. So put on your economics hat here, Professor, and explain why you think that is.
Well, it's hard to come up with a cause and effect.
Because we say so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the first thing that struck me was, you know, as I read down the list, I was like Manhattan, New York, Brooklyn, New York. And the first two, I thought, well, who in the right mind would want to live in those two places anyway? And then I hit Honolulu, and it's like, wait a minute. But yeah, they do. They have horribly restrictive gun laws in Honolulu. But again, unless your income is based strictly on living in New York, if you could live pretty much anywhere you wanted, I'm not sure I'd take Honolulu or New York, really.
Well, Honolulu is pretty much like 72 degrees year-round, whereas New York is like 104 in August while the garbage men are on strike and is like negative 15 in the winter.
Yeah, so, wind screaming between the buildings.
I've never been to Hawaii, but I lived in Southern California, and it's always warm there, and it's often too warm. But I've heard Hawaii is just perfect year-round. But, we're going to talk more on this mellow version of the Freedom Fiends with the Bad Quaker when we get back from the market. We're going to run to the market real quick. Yeah. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Freedom Fiends here on the Liberty Radio Network. A network of liberty. Liberty Radio Network is kind of like the anarchist NPR. It's 24/7, good programming, well-produced. And today we have Ben Stone filling in for Nima Vedati, who is on a boat. I'm on a boat.
I'm here.
Yeah. So we were looking up...
I'm not on a boat.
During the break, we were looking up crime stats for the 10 most expensive cities, and they are normal to slightly high for national average, but I made the observation that I believe that in a lot of big cities, crimes go underreported. Like a lot of people, if they get mugged, they've been mugged before, they reported it to the police. It took a lot of their time. The police were invasive and they didn't solve the crime. They didn't get their property back. And I think a lot of people, even statists, just go, why bother calling the police for this? You know, they're not going to get my stuff back. And, you know, you have to if it's an insurance thing. But if there's no insurance on whatever it is, a lot of people in those cities probably go like, oh, it's another tax. You know, I helped the poor today, so they don't even bother. So you've been shot, huh, Ben?
Yeah, and you know, I didn't think of it when we were talking about that earlier, but I used to run a pizza restaurant. I managed quite a few pizza restaurants back in the day. And I was robbed three different times. Let's put it this way. I was the point of attempted robberies three different times. Neither was successful. But the third one, I didn't even bother to report it. And it happened in the pizza store. Three guys came in and attempted a robbery. And I dealt with them and didn't even bother to call the police or anything. It just, they irritated me. I threw a hot pizza at them and they ran away. And I went right back to what I was doing.
Yeah. DJ got mugged at gunpoint when she was like 18 or 19. She was working at a no-tell motel in Texas. She was working the night shift, and someone came in and pointed a gun at her and took the money, and she quit. And her boss was like, "Why are you quitting?" She's like, "Someone pointed a gun at me. I'm going to go get a different job."
And he's like, "Hang on,
what, TJ?" Oh, the boss wanted her to shoot next time, and she went and got a different job. And I've been mugged twice. Once with a knife to my throat at 2nd and B in New York City, and once with no weapon, but, you know, the guy was like twice my size, and eight of his buddies were standing under a tree about 20 feet away. And that was a weird one. He actually like took me and my friend's wallets, had us empty out our pockets, took the money out of our wallet, gave it back to us, and he gave me my keys back, which had a little penknife on them. Like, "Here, little man, take your little knife and get out of here." I mean, he was that confident. It was just like, it was like paying a toll. The one in New York was really scary. The one in New Orleans was real down home and a very honest mugging. The one in New York was very dishonest because they came up to me and pretended to want to help me. And the guy put his hand behind my neck like, "Hey, buddy, let me help you." And then with his other hand, brought a switchblade up to my neck. That was really friggin' scary. But I didn't even consider reporting either of those to the police. And I was a statist back then. I was just like, yeah. Yeah, some black dude took my money. It was dark. I don't know what he looked like. Would have been the New Orleans one. And the New York one would have been some Puerto Rican guy took my money. That's my description. I mean, that was like the only description I had. It happened so fast. And you were going to talk about the speed at which gunfights happen in your experience. Talk about that.
Yeah, the way I generally say it, five times I've had a gun drawn on me. In anger, where people drew the gun on me, not the other way around. Five times I've had the gun drawn, four times they pulled the trigger, three times the gun fired, and twice I've been hit. And each of these are separate incidences. In one case where the person was shooting at me, she probably shot, I think she shot all six shots and reloaded before I got to her, grabbed the gun out of her hand, unloaded it, threw the bullets out in the desert, and threw the gun on the ground and yelled at her. But she didn't hit me.
Another time you took the gun away from the guy and you kept it, right?
Yeah, he actually pulled a shotgun at me at just point blank range. He was the barrel of the gun was probably 4 to 5 inches from my chest, which was really a bad tactical move on his part, because I was able to snatch it out of his hands, beat him with it, humiliate him horribly, and then take his gun. I mean, keep his gun.
A lot of people who are statists, when they mention gun ownership, think no one should need to own a handgun and say, "Oh, all you need is a shotgun." A young Joe Biden said that recently. And he said some crazy ass stuff too that like was illegal. You know, he's like, "Well, if someone comes on my property, I'll just pull my wife will pull the shotgun and just start shooting." You know, and that's like, what? If someone wanders onto your property, you're going to shoot them? That's immoral and illegal and homicide. But you know, the thing about shotguns, they are a really good thing for home defense. They don't have a lot of over penetration. They're not going to go through a brick wall and hit your neighbors like some rifles will. But they have disadvantages over handguns in that the longer the barrel on a gun, the easier it is for someone to take it away from you, to get leverage and take it. I mean, if in the middle of the night, the few times I've picked up a gun and followed all the rules of gun safety and checked out a noise with a flashlight, not pointing the gun in front of me, pointing it down at the wooden floor with nobody below us. The couple times I've done that and discovered it's a cat knocking over a dish. You know, my go-to gun is a Glock, man. It's not the shotgun, and I have a shotgun, but it's not good for going around tight corners the way a handgun is. And you can pull a handgun right up to your chest and hold it. It makes it a lot easier, a lot harder to take away.
If assuming you don't have children in the house that you have to go to and protect, in the case with like in my house with where it's myself and my wife, a shotgun is a good thing to have in the sense that if I heard a sound in the house that was actively a person breaking in, then the smart thing for me to do would be to take the shotgun, position myself in our bedroom so that I'm covering the bedroom door and just sit and wait until they come in. And At that point, I can identify them with a flashlight and decide whether to cut them in half with a shotgun or not. But I wouldn't go walking around the house with the shotgun for the reasons you just said.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I used to really kind of enjoy conversations like this, and now I think they're kind of a necessary evil. I have a really weird attitude about guns. I kind of like them for the mechanical excellence of them, but I kind of wish they weren't necessary. I wish I didn't need to have a gun, and I feel that in the world, I need to have a gun. And I'm not embarrassed of guns. I'm not going to look at them the way statists want me to look at them, but I don't know, man, just guns. Really? Guns? I have guns? I guess I do. If you would have told 30-year-old me I'd have a bunch of guns, I would have been kind of horrified. And I guess, I don't know if I'm horrified by it. I'm just more like, ugh. You know, it's kind of like having, you know, I guess a really common analogy, and I do have this, is I have fire extinguishers all over the house, and I make sure they're charged and replace them when they're getting low. Yeah. I wish I didn't have to do that. But, you know, you live in a world, it's kind of like having chains for your car if you live somewhere there's snow. It's just, oh, you got to have those things. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Living in Ohio, you have to have a snow shovel. You just have to have it. I don't like it. I don't want to have a snow shovel. I don't like using a snow shovel. I don't like the thought of a snow shovel. I don't like seeing someone else with a snow shovel.
Do you want to ban and register snow shovels? You have to prove a need to have a snow shovel.
Yeah. But unfortunately, I have two snow shovels and a electric snow shovel.
I have a gas-powered snow blower. I call it a snow mower. I really actually kind of like it a lot. I don't like snow shovels. They're a lot of work. But the snow blower is fun, man. It's a lot of fun. I like it. Do you have one?
No, I just have a little, I think they call it a snow broom.
A snow broom.
It's a little electric, almost the size of a push broom. And it just slings it randomly away from you.
Yeah. 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 So hell froze over. Did you have more to say about that?
No, unless you want to talk about me getting shot. That's always fun to talk about.
That's far more interesting than what the ACLU did this week. Go ahead. What's it like being shot? A lot of people that have guns just can't imagine. So they should know. What's it like getting shot, Ben?
I was shot two different ways. One way was at point-blank range. The attempt was to shoot me in the head, and I moved my head and got my hand in the way of the right in front of the barrel, so the shot was directly through my hand at about an inch distance.
What was the caliber?
That was a 20, just a little 22.
A rifle or handgun?
Handgun.
Okay.
And it hurt an unbelievable amount, and I think most of the pain was from the muzzle flash because it just kind of cooked the back of my hand. But it went straight through, didn't hit any bones, and so it was just a matter of running a Q-tip through there and cleaning it all out, which was not fun.
Did you go to the hospital?
No. We didn't do that.
So you didn't register your injury?
No.
We'll have more about the joys of getting shot when we come back from the market. We're going to step out to the market here for 6 or 8 minutes and be right back. Worms. Fiends.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
6 drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Freedom Fiends with Ben Vadavi. How you doing today, Ben Stone Vadavi?
I'm doing much better since I just heard about the necrophiliac?
Yeah, the Salem Witches. I love the Onion News. I love that Ian puts it on right before or after Fox News sometimes. And I didn't get that at first, and it's so obvious. DJ had to explain it to me. I'm like, why does he do that? And she's like, to show that they sound the same, that the real news sounds as insane as the Onion.
They both have the same level of legitimacy.
Yep, but one's more fun than the other. So talk about getting shot. You got some more getting shot stories, huh?
Yeah, it hurts. It really does. The second time I was shot was under very different circumstances. The first time, the person actually wanted to kill me. The second time, the person wanted to kill my roommate and shot me by accident.
Wow. But
I was looking through the peephole of the door of the trailer that we were living in. There was several of us in there involved in black market activities. And the gentleman who was not satisfied with his black market purchase thought it was my roommate looking through the peephole and shot through the door with a .22 rifle. And it's this cheap trailer door, which is a very, very thin aluminum skin on the outside, cardboard in the middle, and very thin wood veneer, like a plywood, very, very super thin plywood veneer on the inside. So I had chunks of aluminum, chunks of wood, and chunks of lead, because the bullet tried to fragment the little 22 tried to come apart as it went through that tiny little bit of resistance, and it hit me right square in the sternum and broke my sternum, and it dropped me to the ground. It was just like a hammer hit me in the chest.
Wow.
And I thought, because I didn't know how big the rifle was, you know, all I saw is I looked through the peephole and I saw a rifle flash, and it felt like a sledgehammer smacked me in the chest. So I dropped to the ground, not by choice, and couldn't breathe. And I thought, well, that's it. I'm dead. I'm gone. And then I looked at the floor, and there was only a little tiny drop of blood. And I thought, no, I'm good. And I took a breath. But then I couldn't get anybody to pull the bullet, because the bullet was wedged in my sternum. And I had to get forceps, because we kept forceps around for
illicit purposes.
And so I had to get forceps and wire pliers, needle nose wire pliers, and pull the chunks of wood and aluminum and lead out of my chest. It was not fun at all.
Was there any cardboard in your chest?
No, there was like little splatters of it all over in a circle, probably about 3 or 4 inches wide. But and they stuck to me, so I still had to peel them off. But they, I couldn't tell what was, you know, what was wood and what was cardboard, and it all hurt.
Did you go to the hospital?
No hospitals involved. We had a strict rule. I started to say that a minute ago. We had a strict rule: unless you have a serious bleeder, nobody calls the or if a concussion resulted in an indentation of the skull. That was our two rules. A bleeder that couldn't be controlled, or an indentation of the skull, and in which case there would be a drive up to the emergency room door, carefully push them out on the ground, and drive away.
You didn't have a like veterinarian on payroll or anything?
We didn't. Some of the more well-to-do bikers and stuff did, but we were low level, so we didn't have such luxuries.
Yeah. I know a nurse, but she lives 4-hour drive from here, so... I don't know if I'd, yeah. Anyway, so have you been shot any other times?
Just the two times that I've actually been hit. I mentioned the one crazy, there was this crazy old lady way out in the middle of the desert that I'm just, you know, going, it's out in BLM land. It's all so-called public property. And I'm walking along. I didn't know I was anywhere near anyone's house, excuse me, coughing into the radio. But evidently she had a trailer parked out in the middle of the desert that was right over this little rise, so I couldn't even see it was there. And I was too close to what she felt to be her homestead.
Get off my property.
Yeah, she made no warnings. She just started shooting at me, and bullets are ricocheting all around me. And my son was even there. My son and a friend of mine were a lot closer to her than I was.
Physically, not like they were buddies.
Yeah, exactly. They were closer physically. And it just infuriated me that someone would try to shoot me with my son right there, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just charged her and yanked the gun out of her hand. She had already reloaded it and was pointing it at me again. But, you know, it's not, I don't suggest this for people. This is not, probably not the best way to handle when someone draws a gun on you, is to go angry and yank it out of their hands. That's probably not the best method. But with the case I was talking about earlier with the guy with the shotgun, I kind of expected him to do that. And I was actually carrying at the time. And it was more convenient to yank the gun out of his hand and beat him with it than attempt to try to draw mine. I knew he would have had me in that kind of a situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Humans and their desires.
It hurts, though. I mean, it really hurts.
Yeah.
And those were both 22s. Yeah. So I can't imagine what it'd be like to be shot with a full-size caliber.
22s, and it sounds like 22s fired by people who didn't know what the hell they were doing. You know, 22 could be pretty formidable in the right hands. If they shoot you in the eye and it ricochets around in your brain, you could be, you know, a vegetable or dead.
Yeah, the first guy, his intention was to put the bullet right in the back of my head. And he was, his handgun was probably 3 to 4 inches away from my head, maybe 5 inches. And so, and he was going to do it right in front of my crew. And this was a message, this was a very clear, him walking up, it was in a parking lot of a Shakey's Pizza in Southern California. And he walked right up to the car, put the gun up to the back of my head, and he was going to shoot me right square in front of my crew that was, you know, everywhere standing around watching.
Wow.
So it was purely an act of discipline and defiance. That turned uglier after he pulled the trigger for him. We just drove away. The bullet actually went through my hand, hit the dash of the car, fragmented. A chunk of it went into the knee of the driver. His reaction was to stomp on the gas. We peeled out of the parking lot and took off, went to a safe house. And then I was told in no uncertain terms, sit here, don't move, we'll take care of this. And I stayed in the house probably, I think it was almost 2 weeks. But maybe not quite that long. But during that time, the situation was resolved in a very horrible and negative fashion.
So they sat down with an arbitrator and talked it out calmly?
Yes, that's exactly cool.
Now let's just move on from there. So I think that there are two misconceptions that a lot of people who've never been in a gun battle have. I've never been in a gun battle. You know, I've had a knife to my throat. I've had a gun pointed at me, but it was a friendly gun, I guess I'd say. It was basically way back in the day before I had guns, and it was someone who later became a good friend who I think he was trying to kind of live up to a reputation as a crazy artist who answers the door pointing a shotgun at whoever's there. You know, I don't think he really meant to use it. I didn't like it, and I wouldn't put up with it now, but it was not a real threat. The knife to my throat was a real threat. They were ready to effing kill me. I mean, the one guy said to the other guy, you know, after they cleared out my pockets, they said, okay, let's take him around the corner. And the other guy's like, no, man, we got the money. Let's go score. And then someone walked by. So they split. And if that person hadn't walked by or the other guy hadn't been able to talk him out of it, they were going to take me around the corner and torture me with a knife to, you know, find out what I had, where, whatever. So it was not good. It's not good. People are bastards. So the two misconceptions that I think people have, one is that gun battles go on for many seconds or even minutes, like in TV. And the other misconception is that gun battles happen like, you know, that's the misconception from modern movies where you've got 10 people shooting at 10 people and none of them can hit anything and they reload and it goes on forever. And the other misconception that we'll talk about when we get back from the market is the misconception that the person is going to be stock still 8 yards away from you with their arm out, pulling their gun slowly and giving you time to pull yours and react. So we'll talk about that when we get back with Freedom Fiends with Ben Stone. Freedom Fiend with Ben Stone. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one.
If you want to put your voluntarious money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.
So Ben Stone. You there, Ben Stone?
I'm here. I'm typing away in chat.
I see that. Yeah. Fiends, yo. So, I posted a picture in the chat room, and it's me signing the Freedom Fiends contract with GCN, who are going to be syndicating us on radio. Radio. And Nima's going to sign his when he gets back, but mine getting signed and mailed off yesterday gets the process of getting us up and running, going. And I'm very happy in that picture. I don't usually even smile in pictures, even when I'm happy, but I really like this picture. I had DJ actually photograph me signing it. I didn't do what presidents do. I didn't sign each letter with a different pen and then give the pens to different, you know, people. And she wants the pen. It's like a 19-cent plastic pen, but she really likes the pen, so I'm not going to be selling it on eBay or anything. But it's a very important picture to me because it is... It's pretty much the happiest moment of my life. Even though I don't look that happy. Because other than getting married, it's pretty much the happiest moment of my life because it's me attaining a lifelong goal. I have wanted to be on radio since I was about 8, and I'm 48 now. So I've worked on this for 4 decades, and it's finally happening. Ian Freeman's helped a lot. The Fiends have helped. Nima's helped a lot. Nima's great. I couldn't do it without Nima. Well, I guess I could do it with Ben, but Nima's on a boat. So we're going to make fun of Nima for being on a boat when he should be here talking with me and Ben, talking with Ben and I. But that picture, I realized that me signing that is far more important to me than the signatures on the Constitution of the United States of America. A lot of people consider the Constitution to be sacred and would be really offended that I'm saying that. But here's my problems with the Constitution. And I am a recovering constitutionalist. I used to be a constitution humper. But here's my problems with it. A, I didn't sign it. It's not a voluntary contract. I was born into it, and that's literally the definition of slavery. Another problem that I have is that some of the founding lawyers, as opposed to the founding fathers, some of the people like Hamilton, inserted some weasel words in there to bring us to the fedocracy we have now. There's a lot of things in the Ten Commandments of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the First Ten Amendments, that are all about limiting government. And that's my third problem with it is they don't limit government, man. I mean, what part of shall not be infringed do gun grabbers not understand? Every gun law is an infringement. And every freedom of speech infringement's an infringement. And almost everything that's done by politicians violates those Ten Commandments. Of liberty, of less tyranny. And what's my other problem with it? The other problem with it is that I actually believe that Nancy Pelosi is right when they said, you know, how do you constitutionally validate Obamacare? And she said, the Commerce Clause and the General Welfare Clause. And literally, if you read those two things, they basically say the government can do whatever it wants if it's for the people. Or if it covers interstate commerce, and there's no limits on it. And the Constitution also puts in writing that they can point a gun to your head and tax you. Of course, the taxes were a lot less back then. The Revolutionary War was fought over basically raising taxes and trying to take the guns away. And the the time trying to take the guns now are way more infringy than back then. And the taxes that everyone pays all the time, even if they don't pay taxes, just the sales tax you pay is way higher than what all the taxes were back then. So that's all my problems with the Constitution, and that's why a picture of me happily signing a contract I'm really jazzed to sign is a lot more important to me than Thomas Jefferson's signature on some dead piece of parchment in the National Archives, sealed under helium. What do you think, Ben?
I would have to agree 100% because, especially in the range of what you're signing it. It's voluntary on your part. You may contest part of it later if you decide that you don't like part of it, that you didn't notice or some deception.
I don't see that happening because other people I know who deal with that company are very happy with them. But it does say in it how arbitration would be done in the event of that. There's nothing like that in the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution that says, if you don't like it and you want to get out, here are the steps to get out. To me, the only get out that would be acceptable would be sit right where I am and just not have to abide by a contract that was foisted onto me as an accident at birth.
Yeah, and the Constitution is written in such a way that it is entirely not voluntary. You will accept this or you will be a casualty of this federal government that's being created.
Yeah. So talk a little more about voluntary contracts in general and why they're good and why voluntary interaction is the basis of all that is good. And a lot of people listening to this know this stuff, but we consider the Fiends and the Quakers for the ages. And we're hoping that this stuff is listened to in 100 years. And there may be people right now today listening who have no idea what we're talking about. You know, we take things for granted, like, well, yeah, I believe in voluntary exchanges. And, you know, people think that means giving gifts in the office at Christmas because your boss tells you to. They don't really understand what it is or may not understand what it is. So the choir that we're preaching to can go look at pictures of cats or just listen to us ramble. And the uninitiated can be initiated. So, Ben, go.
Well, of course, we're told that if we don't have this arm of government hanging over us that the Constitution created, that everything will fall apart. Everything will fall into chaos. We'll just be, killing in the streets, and hordes of marauders will roam, taking what they want and all this kind of thing. But humans typically don't behave in that way. No species that behaved in that way would exist very long. It would be a self-destructive species, and it certainly wouldn't have the long, rich history that humanity has. The fact is that humans make contracts with each other, unwritten, individual contracts between each other constantly. Take the big controversy now with marriage. You know, a marriage contract is between two people or 10 people or a person, a goat, and a tree. I don't care. It doesn't really matter. The fact is, and I might say I'm not endorsing any of those things as good. I'm just saying that the relationship is a contract between the individuals. And to bring in a third party and the threat of violence doesn't add anything positive to that union, doesn't add anything positive to that contract.
Hang on a sec there and explain the threat of violence for someone who wouldn't understand what you mean by that. I mean, are you talking about domestic abuse? What do you mean? What threat of violence? What marriage threat of violence? What are you talking about, Ben?
Well, let's just and this is actually not that unusual. These kind of things actually happen. You have a man and a woman who've been married for some time, and they decide to get a divorce, and so they have to go, and first they had to get the government's permission to get married, and now they have to get the government's permission to end that marriage. And we're running out of time, Michael.
We have more time to talk about the violence of the state and how things could be done without it after we go to the market on Freedom Fiends with Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Freedom Fiends with Ben Vidotti Stone. What's up, Ben?
That's LRN.FM.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodiles, So you were talking about marriage and why we don't need no stinking badges to get married. Us people.
Yeah.
Explain more about that.
I think I was right in the middle of going on a rant about how you have to get the government's permission to get married, then you have to get the government's permission to not be married anymore. And there's been cases where things went wrong in the not getting married anymore division of that group. And they're going through a divorce or whatever. And then the state just arbitrarily, some so-called judge, makes a decision that neither the husband or the wife would have agreed to. But the judge decides this is how it's going to be, maybe in dividing up the children or dividing up the goods or whatever it is. And that's it. Neither of them, I mean, you can appeal back and forth and you can just, you know, absorb your whole life into trying to fight with the powers that be. But the fact is, some other person who is not actually involved in this relationship has the power to enforce their will upon you. And let's just say, for example, that you and the other partner in the contract don't agree with what that so-called judge has come up with. Well, too bad. Because ultimately, the judge has the power of the government behind him, and his word is just like law. And if you try to resist that, then you find out what the violence of the state really is, what the violence of government really is. And this is all in the example of the most basic of human contracts, whether or not for two people to spend their lives in dedication to each other or whatever number. Again, having a background in theology, I could make a theological argument that it's none of the government's business to limit marriage to two people, whether that's male and female or anything else. I think I can make a pretty good biblical argument that it's none of the government's business one way or the other. But even above and beyond that argument, just the idea that when the government is involved in a contract dispute, no matter what the two parties may feel about it, ultimately it comes back to the force of government if you don't like it. And very often, large corporations will bypass this whole process by not going to government lawyers or judges and so forth for arbitration purposes. There's all kinds of different private arbitration that corporations work on all the time. Sometimes you hear the famous stories where some company is sued by another company or whatever. But what you don't know about, what you don't see obvious in the media, is the massive quantity of corporations who use private arbitrators and settle these disputes without aggression, without utilizing the fist of the government. Because oftentimes when two companies have a dispute and they're going to rely on the government to settle that dispute, it takes it out of their hands and then they're forced to abide by whatever this government judge decides is right. Well, if you have very much exposure to government judges, then the more exposure you have, in my opinion, the more exposure you have to government judges, the less confidence you're going to have in them. And corporations often have a lot of exposure to government judges. So very often it's the case that they prefer to hire a private arbitrator to settle their disputes. And now, just to take this on a rant, it's a little bit different when an individual is dealing with a large corporation, and the corporation forces through the agreement that you sign when you take on this arrangement with this corporation. Oftentimes, in the paperwork, there's something about how you'll go to a private arbitrator. Well, when it's an individual against a corporation, a lot of times the corporation will stack the deck with their private arbitrator. But then again, it falls back to, well, what is a corporation? Well, a corporation is a very special magical company authorized by the government to have powers that other companies don't have. Well, again, this is brought in through an arrangement between that corporation and the government, and backed up ultimately by the fist of the government. So even in that situation, you've got this fist constantly over your head telling you it has to be done this way, and if you don't like it, there's no other choice, there's no way out. Just like with the Constitution, it's all written in one direction, and that direction is for the power of the government over the people.
Well said, Ben. Well said. So how can contracts work voluntarily? How would the world not fall apart in the absence of government? Now, let's put aside the lie for a minute that everyone would be shooting each other in the streets, because I kind of feel like everyone's shooting each other in the streets because of the government. When the government's not shooting people, they're creating situations where people want to shoot people, like in the inner cities, where, you know, law-abiding people can't protect themselves and things are illegal that drive up prices. But let's just talk about how things would get done. Like, how would the water continue to flow to your house and not poison you? How would electricity flow to your house? How would the roads work? How would that work without government, Ben? I don't understand.
It's kind of funny that you should mention that. I was talking by, you know, by text, not in real live words, but over the inner tubes. I was talking to a well-known economist not long ago, and we were talking about different forms of government or non-government that have existed through the ages. And he kind of scolded me because I didn't cover that particular topic in the things that I had said up to that point. And I kind of chuckled a little bit because I this is going to sound sort of like I'm being a smart aleck, but taking the risk of that, I said to him that in the circles of anarchists that I hang around with, asking about how the roads would be built is sort of a running gag. It's sort of a running joke among us that we have so covered that and gone beyond it. From an economics point of view, it's called the public good problem. And whether you're talking about, you know, how would we have police force, or how would we have electricity, or how would we have water, or how would we enforce contracts, or ultimately, how would we build the roads? Well, who builds the roads now? Contractors build the roads. And why do they do that? Is it out of the kindness of their heart? No, of course not. There's a contract, there's a job, there's money involved, there's an incentive. Well, currently the incentive is somebody in government decides a road either needs to be built or improved. But the problem is there's no price mechanism in government. Without getting into a really big economic thing, in a sense, it doesn't cost the government anything to make the road, and it doesn't cost the government anything to make a mistake about the road. So they might be putting the road in the right place or the wrong place. There's no punishment or reward one way or the other. Now, the market provides a punishment and a reward every time a player in the market takes an action, a player in the market being a person, an entrepreneur, a buyer, a seller, who decides to take action. Did the price go up? Did the price go down? Did I buy something good? Did I get ripped off? There's this constant price mechanism that rewards and punishes actions in the market. But the state doesn't have that. So in a market situation, you would still have an incentive to have a road or some way of transportation. And there would be people, for instance, grocery stores, who really want to be able to have food get up to their grocery store from Mexico or the San Joaquin Valley of California or wherever. They have an incentive to want to be able to get the trucks to their grocery store. So there is, now we have an incentive, and now we also have a price. Well, what's it going to cost them? Well, if they make a union of other grocery stores, and they each one voluntarily choose to put a certain amount of money in, then they can actually build roads, and they don't even have to be toll roads. And this is not theory. This is how it was done all the way up until the 1920s in America.
Worms. You're so good, Ben. You're so good. And I'm good at multitasking because I've been doing other things. Someone just said, like, I sent someone a list of things he wanted while you were talking, and he's like, man, how do you do that while doing a show? We'll talk more about how to be in demand in the market when we get back for our final bit.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. download in Cedar Torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog The Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review The Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Ben Quaker, I'm the Freedom Fiends. How you doing, Ben?
Michael.
Yeah.
It's good to talk to you, Mike.
It is. We do this a lot, though. We just don't broadcast it. So, that was a really succinct and detailed and excellent summation of how, who would build the roads without the government. Government doesn't want you to think that roads would happen without it. And they have a lot of goons to enforce that. And we don't want to talk about goons today, though. Someone said, that's a nice story, but I don't hear any goons in it. Oh, there's goons in there because, you know, the government is based on goons. Without goons, laws and taxes are just suggestions. But we like having goon-free days. So I want to talk a little bit about more about the market, or as some people call it, the free market. But, you know, that's kind of repetitive and misused because really it's just the market. So I want to talk about, you know, you can have a free market, or even you can have the market we have now and be stuck working in it. But to maximize your desirability in the market, I'm pretty desirable in the market. And I'm not tooting my own horn a lot. I'm using this as a teaching hospital example. I've actually written a bunch of books about how to do your own art and things like that. A lot of them are just software directions that go out of date really quickly, but a lot of them are timeless, how to interact with people and make them want to interact with you and pay you for things. I have not worked a day job since 2000. 2000, I started making a living making a really crappy living. Now I'm making a better living. Still not great, but basically I quit my day job in 2000 and started writing books and making films. And that's still what I do for a living mostly. The podcast, which is now becoming a radio show, is it's been a hobby for like 2 years. I mean, we lost money the first year, barely made any money the second year, and that's not why we do it. And I work more than 40 hours a week on this, and Nima works as much as he can on this and still have a day job and a family. And basically, a lot of it is being able to multitask. And, you know, when I was a kid, I mean, if they had had the definition ADD when I was a kid, they would have called me ADD and drugged me. Fortunately, I was in grade school and high school a few years before that, so I got out of there without being drugged, and it's a good thing. But what they were saying was a deficiency turned out to work to my advantage. I learned to do a bunch of things at once and sort of hone my scattered smart brain to be able to do one thing while doing another thing while doing another thing. I always have like 10 windows open on the computer, and the computer has really helped me. I mean, I look at the computer as, you know, kind of the way that a lever increases mechanical force, a computer increases brain force and allows me to do more and streamline it and sort it and deal with it in a way that makes sense to me. I spend a lot of my time falling down wormholes on the internet, even just on Wikipedia, and I'll start on, you know, the history of AM radio, and then five clicks later, I'm on the nuances of the renal system. And that's how I learn. I mean, I didn't learn well in school, where they make you all sit in a row and show up at the same place at the same time and all study the same things at the same pace. And I think that we are at a time now that surpasses all other times previously of availability of information and availability of dissemination of information and inability to block the dissemination of information. And weirdos like me who couldn't concentrate in algebra class in eighth grade in the 70s can do really well. And I would encourage people, if they've
younger people, especially if they're still in school, if people are constantly telling you, you'll never amount to anything because blah, blah, blah. I mean, I had a an English teacher say, you're a good writer, but you'll never amount to anything because you can't spell. And I've made a good part of my living writing, you know, for the past 10 years, 13 years. And that's because computers came along that could do it. And they don't just do it by themselves. You have to work with the computer and have a brain to know how to use the spell check. But don't believe people that tell you, and I'm not saying you can do whatever you want if you put your mind to it, because I think people being told that as a lie is a big problem with the world, to where everyone thinks they're owed something. But I would conversely say, if your whole life people have been telling you, you don't have what it takes to do this because blank, blank, blank. I mean, I'm looking at when I was 15, I wanted to become a radio personality, and I talked to a local radio personality, and he said, oh, well, go to college and study marketing and communication and then intern at a radio station. And I didn't do that. I did it my way. And I went and did a bunch of other stuff for 30 years. So you can do whatever you want if you're meant to do it without going through the normal channels. And even if you have what some people consider problems, where you can't concentrate in a straight line. But the people who can't concentrate in a straight line are the people who... the squares like to say, think out the box, but I think that's a square statement. I mean, I'm thinking about where I'm going, there aren't even boxes, that kind of thing. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, where we're going, there ain't no roads.
To quote Ernie Hancock.
Yeah, we can steal from him. Ernie's a good person to steal from.
He is. We're not really stealing because we're crediting him.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. But if you're going to steal from somebody, steal from the best, and Ernie's good.
Yeah, what is it they say? Good artists borrow, great artists steal, something like that. That's kind of silly. I like one I came up with better, which is, behind every great artist, there's a good woman. No, behind every great man, there's a good woman he steals all his ideas from.
Hey, can I give a teaser since we're kind of working away from the previous topic?
Yeah.
On the issue of the public good... problem or the public good argument.
I like maybe problem.
The next. What's that?
I like problem instead of argument. Yeah, it's a problem.
The public good problem. Maybe on the next time that I'm on the Fiends podcast with you,
Thursday.
I'll talk about privatized sewer systems. I have some kind of crazy ideas on that. If we have time. Who knows? We might have something else to talk about.
We'll have 2 hours with no commercials on Thursday. You're going to be doing the Fiends Live on the Fiends Live channel.
I can talk for 2 hours about private sewers.
Cool. I'll update my contact list and file my nails while you talk. I'll just be your board. I'll be your board operator. That's it.
That sounds great.
So what advice do you have for people trying to make it in this increasingly difficult world? On their, you know, to do their thing, basically. Because you are uniquely, I think, also uniquely in a different way from me, qualified, because you're a guy who basically, you know, retired and can't work a normal job anymore because you've been hit in the head too many times. And what you were planning on doing, which a lot of people would have done, is just sit in your garden and feed your squirrels. But you decided that you had to speak into a microphone, even though that was hard for you to do. It was really easy for me to do. I've been trying to get up on stage when other people were speaking and speak since I was 8 years old, even when I had nothing to say. And now I have something to say. So you were kind of afraid of the microphone. How'd you get over that? And how did you become the bad Quaker that people know and love?
Well, the short version of it is I would have preferred just to stay in the garden. You know, I really feel peace working in a garden and growing things, knowing what I'm growing, eating what I'm growing. And, you know, my wife and I really enjoy canning and doing all the preserving methods that we do, and we really enjoy that. But deep down inside, and they always say, you know, find something you like to do and you'll never work a day in your life. And I'm not disputing that, but there was something deeper inside me that was digging at me that just said, you can't sit out here and hold what you have inside you. You have got to take it out and show it to other people, because if you don't, it's just going to eat at you your whole life. You have to say these things, and you have to say them in public. And I did hate the microphone. I hated the public knowing who I am. I wanted desperately to be silent and quiet and hidden and behind fake names, and you know, and I was for years. But it was something way deep, you know, and a religious person might say that that was God speaking to me or whatever. I there's no way I can judge that one way or the other. But I know that I could not, just out of selfishness, I could not hide in my garden, hide behind anonymous names, and not come out and speak openly what I think and what I feel and the things that I've learned.
I'm really glad you did come out of your garden and talk on the internet, because I consider you one of my best friends, even though I've never met you. And I will meet you, because you're going to go drive around the country solving mysteries with your wife in a van at some point. And I live in the country of America, so you will find me and stay here and we'll have a good time. But that's about all we have to say. And all I got to say is I'm really honored to be your friend, Ben, and it's really been good to have you on here today. And you'll be back on Thursday.
And Michael, I'm honored to be your friend.
Group hug, man.
This kiss.
Like big old hetero hairy bikers in a bar trying to freak out straight people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worms.
Worms, Michael.